Welcome to Take the Red Pill,
where we explore the realities within our reality.
We are your hosts, David
and Donald.
This week, we are going to be talking about past lives, reincarnation, multiple incarnations, and such. So actually, Donald, if you want to kick it off, if you want to talk about kind of your, I guess, idea and take and beliefs in reincarnation and...
Depending on who you talk to and what area you're looking at, different people have different ideas on exactly what is past lives and reincarnation. Most people believe that you come down and reincarnate over and over again on the quote-unquote wheel of life until you work out all your lessons, work out all your karma. The funny thing is, for me, when I was first getting into this topic years and years ago, was what started the karma to begin with?
Good question.
Yeah, and I wasn't able to answer that. To this day, still have a little bit of difficulty with that. To clear up a couple things right now, I don't really believe in the whole meta-transmutation where you basically start off as a rock and then you become a snail and then you become a fly. I don't think reincarnation goes through species.
Okay.
And I know some belief systems have that. I believe once you get on a karmic wheel of whatever species you're in that species to learn the lessons that you are. And once your spirit or soul learns those lessons, then you move on to a higher level.
You get promoted, so to speak.
Yeah. Earth is a really cool place for a lot of people and animals and things and consciousness and everything. But if you spend a few millennia here, I think you kind of want to see new horizons occasionally.
Right. It's kind of like, what do I have left to learn here?
Oh, yeah.
You kind of have to move on, get new learning proving grounds, I guess, as it would be called.
Oh, yeah. Is that similar to what you believe, or is there a little difference for you, or what?
You know, it's kind of interesting. I have a belief, and then I have I tend to have beliefs, and then I also tend to have kind of what's the application of this. So I'm always kind of in two camps as far as that goes.
Mm-hmm.
I do believe in reincarnation. I do believe that there are multiple incarnations that we go through. I do believe that we go through each of them with a certain set of lessons. I do believe that we have soul groups with people that we have relationships with in life. What is the saying? There's a moment, a season, and a lifetime. What is that?
To everything, turn, turn, turn.
Yeah.
I
does sound like a lyricism.
Yeah, I don't know sure if that's the one you're referring to.
There's a statement about something about, I don't want to get too much off track, but in each lifetime, you meet a person for a reason, for a season, or for a lifetime.
Oh, okay.
You know, that's that kind of idea behind it. But I do believe that we do have ties with, whether you want to call them souls or whatever term you want to use, that we've had in previous incarnations that we tend to carry over, not exclusively,
mm-hmm.
but that we kind of make agreements, so to speak, with people that you're going to help me through this life lesson. I'm going to help you. And so we're going to serve as this role. I'll be your parent this time around. You know, last time I got to be the brother, this time I get to be the mother, you know, that kind of thing. But so as far as that goes, yeah, I do believe in the incarnation. I have some trouble with the karmic piece, but that's kind of, I think, based on my own ideology.
What's the trouble with the karma?
If
you don't mind me asking, what's wrong with your karma, David?
What's wrong with my karma? It ran over my dogma, the old joke. the trouble I have with it is that it seems to be based on a value system, and that could be a whole other thing that you could kind of go into, and maybe it has some application with this conversation, but I have trouble with the idea that we have to pay karmic debts, because a karmic debt, if we're talking about karma, if we're talking about what you've done, say, to cause suffering to another person in a previous incarnation, then you come back in another incarnation and there's an agreement or there's an obligation to pay that debt, to right that wrong that's been done. Well, my problem is with the whole idea of the right and wrong, because those are very, I think, very physical human concepts.
Not only that, but culturally too.
Culturally, exactly. That's a really good point. Right and wrongs can vary drastically between one culture and another.
So basically, there is no good and there is no evil. There is just life, is what you're saying. And therefore, karma is what we place our value system on what is good or what is bad. And therefore, whatever culture we're born into would determine, you know, if we look into our past lives, whether we have karma from that past life that we're working out this time or not.
Yeah, I think there's some merit to the idea of working out the, in quotes, karma. But I think the if we strip away the value judgment idea of it, that there is a debt you have to pay, or that you've done, you know, to me it's tantamount to sin. It's kind of a similar idea.
Mm-hmm.
But I think when you strip that out and you go for more, okay, this is the role I played in your life. So now we're on to another incarnation and another lesson. Now this is the role I'm going to play as a result of that. For example, if I took someone's life in a past incarnation, well, there's lessons about taking life, and I think that we need to actually learn the other side of that.
Mm-hmm.
I do believe that you could be an aggressor in one life and turn around and be a victim of the same aggression in another life, but I think it's part of learning the gamut of life experience.
The whole contrast of either side?
Exactly. Yeah, that's my belief. What do you think of that?
Well, I would have to go with something that you touched on a couple minutes ago with the relationships that we, with the people that we share this life with. I know that you can go do past life regressions and future life regressions, or progressions, I guess is what they'd be called, and find out, okay, what kind of relationship do I have with this person in my present life, and so on and so forth. For me, reincarnating with different people over and over again, not indefinitely, but for whatever period of time or whatever number of lives, the agreements that we make have to do with, you know, hey, I want to accomplish this in my life, in this lifetime, in this reincarnation. And this person from, you know, let's say three lives ago says, oh, hey, well, I'm looking to accomplish this. Well, those go really good together. Well, hey, if we reincarnate here, we can have an agreement that we'll be able to help each other. I'll help you with your stuff, and you'll help me with my stuff. I think that might be where you're going a little bit, where it's not so much a karma theme as it is a, you know, souls and spirits helping each other accomplish what they need to accomplish, to learn the lessons they need to learn to get to a place where they become more and more enlightened and they grow more and more spiritually so that they, quote-unquote, transcend eventually.
Right, right. And that's kind of your look at it, your take on it?
Oh, yeah, with the agreements part and everything, definitely.
What's your view on karma itself?
Karma is one of those weird things because I have to believe, for me personally, that there is karma, where if you are to become a transcendent being, then you have to work through your baggage, as it were, with, you know, the whole existence of your soul up to that point. I see how karma can work, but at the same time, I also believe in a lot of free agency and that you need to be able to continually grow as opposed to spend all your time working on your past issues and stuff. And I believe the agreements that you have with certain people allow you to do that. Let's say in a past life, you killed somebody in a war between tribes or whatever. You don't have to reincarnate with that person that you killed to work out your quote-unquote karma.
Right.
But at the same time, you can work out that same issue with somebody in this life. I'm not sure exactly how that would present itself because the universe likes to do things in a very unique and kind of interesting ways sometimes.
Yeah, tell me about it.
But you can actually find somebody, you might have an agreement with somebody that in this lifetime, oh, you're trying to work on this piece of your past, so I can help you with this. Well, how will we do that? Well, this is the scenario that we can do, and if that doesn't work, then this person can help you. And it goes into a broader structure for me of what I believe, where you have tons and tons of paths that you can go on, and they were all looked at before you were reincarnated. And for every path that you take, you have a set of lessons that you wanted to learn. And you have a certain amount of people, for whatever path you take, that are there to help you progress and learn those lessons and move forward. So, in any given lifetime, under those ideals, it doesn't matter what you do, you're always going to run into somebody or have somebody there to help you move along, regardless. For me personally, I could have, you know, stayed in the South. I would have still had people that would have helped me move along. I'm sure I'd have different lessons that I'd be working on at that time, but they would probably be close to where I am now in many respects.
Right, right. Now, it's kind of interesting what you're saying about going through the different tributaries. That's kind of the way I look at it, because it's interesting. I read an article last night. I stumbled on it. It wasn't any research. It just kind of happened my way. There's the quantum stuff.
It's karma.
The karma. Yeah, it's karma. Damn it. I think every time I say karma, I'm just going to follow that by damn it. It just kind of feels like it needs it. It's karma. Okay. Damn it. You're going to deal with this. I feel like karma is almost like getting sent to your room without dinner or something. There's just something so punishing that it sounds about it. Karma. Well, which actually, what's that?
Oh, go ahead.
No, I just said, I was going to say that the Indian philosophy says that there's no good karma or bad karma, that karma is just karma, that there's no real value on it. But I think it's been kind of adulterated to a degree to where we've kind of seen it that way. What you're talking about with the different tributaries of experience, in other words, these are the lessons you live. You can make a series of choices, but it may or may not direct you, or it can direct you on that path. It's almost like you, if there's the greater self, there's people who believe in the greater self or the oversoul or whatever you want to call it, that says, all right, you're going to go through life. We're not going to take any choices away from you. You've got free will, and free will is really what the name of the game is. Mm-hmm. It's the total name of the game. I mean, it's a Christian philosophy. It does jive with that. So we're going to put you on here. You've got free will. However, keep in mind that you're coming here to learn a specific set of lessons, or a range of lessons, as it were. So you take, let's say you've got A, B, and C. You take choice A, and you've got people, like you were talking about, you've got people that are to help you along the way. Or you take choice B. Granted, they're a different set of people, but the different set of people will play a similar role to the other people in choice A, what they may have done, if that makes any sense. It's almost like you can make different choices, but there's still going to be people that come into your life to kind of help you learn those lessons, considering the choices you made.
Yeah, and for me, to expand on what I said earlier, with the ABC choices, my belief system is, before you incarnate, you have so many possible things that you can learn, so many lessons and agreements that you have with people, that there is no way that you are going to completely fail, you know, at life. It's like registering for classes at, you know, college or something. It's like, what do I have for this life? What do I have for this semester? What do I have for this quarter? I'd like to take, you know, basket weaving. Sure, that sounds easy.
Yeah.
You know, or I'd like to take quantum mechanics or the expression of religious studies in various cultures. Whatever lessons you want to learn, you're able to pick at them from a whole universal belief system and understanding of, you know, every lesson that you could possibly learn. And then from that, when you get your course schedule, as it were, for this particular lifetime, then you have people that are showing up that are like, oh, well, hey, if you are taking class A, I already have that information from 10 lives ago. I can help you with that. Somehow, if we somehow don't meet, here's somebody over here that we'll run into, you know, probably 10 years later from when we're supposed to meet. Also, since you're wanting to work on lesson B, I know another person says, I know how to do that, and I know somebody that can help you with this. Mm-hmm. And so, depending on how quickly you learn these lessons once you actually get to Earth, then you're able to move faster and you start you start meeting people left and right from just weirdest places where and making connections that help you along with these different lessons that you're supposed to learn. Mm-hmm. And so therefore I don't think it's, you know, just a matter of a few lessons here or a few lessons there. It's possible that you could learn a whole chunk of universal knowledge and enlightenment, and your spirit and brain and everything can actually transcend in one lifetime. It takes a lot.
Right.
It's definitely not easy by any stretch of the imagination, but it's definitely possible. And I believe that the quicker you learn the lessons that you originally came here to learn, then you're able to go to the advanced studies, the next course, the next semester before that you had set up, just in case. You know,
right.
It's like, well, hey, if I finish everything at age 30, then what am I going to do for the next few decades while I'm alive? Oh, don't worry about it. We'll always have something for you to do.
Well, yeah, I mean, with what you're saying there, I think there are a lot of lessons that we have in life that are kind of laid out in stages. Because, for example, there's a lesson that you are meant to learn in this incarnation that you're not going to be able to learn until you hit 53.
Oh, yeah.
Or roughly that age, because it's they're like prerequisites. To use your college analogy, which is a great one, well, you know, you can't learn a bunch of courses. You can't learn your entire bachelor's degree in one semester. You just can't.
Yeah.
You have to spread it out, and it takes time. And also, there are prerequisites. You know, before you could take, I don't know, abnormal psychology 421, you've got to be able to take psychology 101 and then 201 and 223 and all those other ones.
Oh, exactly.
So it seems like that is kind of the setup. And there also are cases where I do believe that you've got, at 53, you've got, you know, lesson X124. I guess that's the filing system they use in the in-between lives. But you've got lesson X124 to learn at the age of 53. However, you haven't filled the requirements,
mm-hmm.
the prerequisites. From when you were 27, you had an opportunity to make a big life change. You missed out on it. You're still kind of grinding your wheels. You're still doing the quote-unquote suffering or whatever it is that you want to kind of put around that.
Mm-hmm.
And at age 53, when you're supposed to make your life lesson, it's like, all right, now instead of that, we're going to try to reinforce the prerequisites here because you got to learn something, buddy. That or you're just going to have to check out of the hotel.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So basically learning a life lesson at 53 as when you're supposed to have learned it at 27 – okay, well, you missed this course, so you're going to have to go back and repeat that. And I know you're going to be like a PhD, almost a PhD, going back to people that are in their, like, working on just their first year in college. But you missed mm-hmm. that. You didn't quite get that lesson.
Right.
I think going with my analogy and what you were saying with the whole college structure, because I think that makes a lot of sense when you're talking about life lessons, is... okay, so maybe you missed that whole lesson when you were 27, but let's say at 35 or 36, you've been single for, you know, your whole life, and you meet somebody, you fall madly in love, and you marry them, and you have a whole relationship for about 7 or 8 years, and through that marriage, you're able to address that lesson that you missed at 27. And of course, other ones, obviously. I agree with you that, you know, it's very difficult to go from, you know, get your whole bachelor's degree in life in one semester. But at the same time, you know, what I was saying earlier, the faster you learn stuff, the more you grasp and understand things, the quicker you're able to go. So you may have like a full load. You might have 15, 18 credits set up for first semester. And if you get through those really, really fast, then you may actually complete 20 or 25 credits that semester.
Well, let me ask you this on that. As far as how quickly you get through these life lessons or these credits or however you want to call them, what would differentiate? In other words, it's, you can understand in college you're studying harder, the material comes more easily to you or whatever. But in life, if there's a life lesson you need to learn, like, let's say, for example, your life lesson is the value of compassion, let's say. Now, it's easy to say, oh, well, you know, somehow I know that I need to learn compassion. You know, so I'm going to learn it. I'm going to experience it. I'm going to feel it. I'm going to embrace it. And like you say, you learn that lesson much faster. Your spiritual growth accelerates. What's the impetus to learn it faster?
Because the faster you learn the lessons that you're able to learn, the sooner you're able to go on to other lessons that are your advanced degree that you set up before you incarnated, that you're able to start getting to if once you have finished your prerequisites. In other words, when you incarnate, everyone's like, okay, we're going to set you up with a whole 4-year bachelor's load in life for, you know, every lesson that you could learn. This is going to be a full course. You know, you could spend your whole life just learning these 4 years worth of information. Now, if you learn all that stuff or address most of that stuff so that you have a fairly good understanding, there's not going to be a point in your lifetime where you're not able to still learn something. So what happens once you reach having learned all those lessons? Well, before you incarnate, you know, your graduate studies, your master's studies, your PhD stuff that you're working on. Now, if you reach that stuff, if you become, quote-unquote, a PhD in life, as it were, then at that level, you're very enlightened, to use that term. In Western culture, enlightenment is such a catch-all phrase, and it's very hard to define it, I guess, the way I'm trying to explain it. If you reach that level of quote-unquote enlightenment, then you're vibrating at such a high level, you're just ready to move on. And whatever age that you reach at that point, that's where, I hate to say it because it's kind of, you know, morbid, but you'll be able to move on at that time.
Right.
If you choose to. Or, at that point, you can also decide, if I'm staying, I might as well be useful, I will start teaching, and right. I will start helping others get to where I am.
Well, let's do that. I want to talk about that for just a second, because, or even longer.
Okay.
It's our choice. It's our podcast.
Yeah. The,
you know, as far as enlightenment goes, what exactly does that mean? What does it mean to grow spiritually? Because the rest of this conversation is just, it's just fodder for, you know, waxing philosophical mm-hmm. without really looking at that.
Yeah. For me, my whole concept of enlightenment is we have a spirit, we have a soul, and there's a difference there. What we're able to grasp and conceive while we're here on this incarnation, you know, on this planet, it's like a cup, and this cup can only take so much. You know, it can expand like crazy. Once it reaches that absolute top where it cannot take any more, the lessons that we're able to learn that allow us to continue to grow are no longer available. That's when our cup is completely full. Enlightenment, that's where enlightenment happens. Well, I'm going to say enlightenment can happen at various times for whatever lessons you're learning, but I think at that point that's where you transcend because there's no more left for you to do, and therefore you need to go move on in the universe to find another place where you can continue to grow. Let me see, to define enlightenment, with every lesson that you have, whatever you're able to take away from it, whatever understanding, that is a form of enlightenment. You take these pieces of enlightenment from every little lesson, you start stacking them up as you go through life, and that reaches you to a level where you're able to transcend, if you get to that level eventually. And mm-hmm. that's kind of like the whole point in my view. But to say that whole cup is enlightenment, I think that would be taking my definition a little too far, because if you have what that, you know, has been termed an aha moment, that is a form of enlightenment. And people have numerous of the ones of aha moments throughout their life. You know, some people even have them a couple times a week or a day. And to say that that is enlightenment is the end-all be-all, in my definition, is not quite correct. So to be able to transcend, your cup has to be full of all these enlightened lessons that you have from your life, that you've learned, that you've had aha moments from. And once you've reached your capacity, that's when you're ready to transcend and move on. And transcend, I guess I'll define that is basically where 3D reality, 4D reality, whatever reality, the complete extension of ends of what you can possibly grasp at this level is reached. And transcendence is literally transcending, moving on into the next level. The lines and boundaries are extended so that you have more room to grow and more lessons to learn, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And to me, I don't really know if you ever stop transcending. I'm sure there's got to be a point somewhere, but I haven't actually come to that in my belief system yet.
Well, you know, it's kind of stretching the brain a little bit, because I think anytime we start talking about enlightenment and about the spiritual realm versus the physical realm, because to me, there's, I think some of what you're talking about is a graduation from the physical class, the physical mm-hmm. school of going through corporeal life to going through incarnation after incarnation. That once you've kind of exhausted that as far as what you can learn from it, then you would graduate and transcend. I think that's what you're saying, correct?
Correct, yes.
Okay. Now, what's interesting to me is enlightenment, I don't consider synonymous with transcendence.
No, me neither.
And I think I want to be careful to make sure that there's no value judgment in the idea of transcended. You know, once again, you got a promotion. You beat out your competition. I don't see it that way. I see it more as what I like is what you talked about with the enlightenment. You get those aha moments. Mm-hmm. The enlightenment is almost like a continuing process, that it's not an objective, that it's more steps you take in your journey. You know, there may be a step that you take that you find enlightenment, but then you got to take another step and that moment passes. Mm-hmm. It's that constant shifting and passing and changing of moments that, I don't know, it's, okay, buckle up. You ready?
Let's go.
Okay. This is the way my weird little brain works. When we're talking about past lives and reincarnation and multiple lives, I'm going to go through kind of a scenario of my understanding from what I've read, a lot of what I actually do embrace, which is that with each incarnation we go through, we have our life lessons. We meet some of those, we don't, we die. And then when we die, we get met by your loved ones, and you do the whole thing, and you're embraced, and you see la la la, and you get your life review, mm-hmm. where you sit down and you kind of go through your life, and basically it's, you get a look at, what did you learn in this lifetime? You know, you kind of missed an opportunity here. And from what's said, I don't know who's, a lot of this has actually been done under hypnosis. They did a lot of this regression, a lot of these they found were pretty consistent. The in-between life thing, where the life reviews, they get these things where it's like the little things, we think there's these big lessons that we've got to accomplish, but it's always these little things that you would have thought were kind of insignificant mm-hmm. that seem to be in life that where we really made a big impact or where we could have. Okay. So you go through the life review. You know, they roll up the screen, you know, and the film runs out. All right, what'd you think of that? What would you give that grade? So you kind of get to chew on it and stuff. And they say, oh, you want to go through any little bits of that again? Do you want to relive it? Some of it you're like, no. And some of it you're like, you know what? I'm going to see what happens if I did B instead of A. You know, and you get to kind of play around with it. You get the sandbox, I guess it's kind of a sandbox, you know. You're not fully in, but you really kind of get to kind of feel and shape and this and that. You got to sit and think about it, you know. And then you go through and you get together with a bunch of spirits and such, or, you know, entities or energies or whatever you want to call them. And they gather around, you say, all right, get ready to go again. You're like, yeah, I'm not ready. I think I want to sit on it more. When you get to a point where you're like, you know what, I think I'm almost ready to go through another incarnation. They're like, all right. Here's the game plan. Here are the lessons you want to learn. Which lessons do you want to focus on this time? You go, okay, I want to focus on this one, this one, this one. And then they say, all right, you know what? Let's get you ready. Here's what you got to know. Here's what you got to do. You know, you get all this study material. You got to understand when you go through life, you know, this is da-da-da-da-da-da-da. You know, remember there's free will. Remember there's the nature of the way energy flows and works. Da-da-da-da-da. Just don't forget that, because you're going to forget it all when you get there. You know, there's going to be hunger and pain and, you know, lovemaking and all that other stuff that's going to distract you. So they do that, and they're like, you got it? You're like, I got to stay up all night and cram. Or I don't know if there's 9 day there. But so you cram, and you cram, and you go through it like, oh, okay, I think I'm ready. They're like, you know what? And they push you. Mm-hmm. Next thing you know, you're like 6, 7, 8 months in the womb or whatever, and you're going, hum, 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 hum. okay, here we go. And you hit the ground running, and then you're an infant, and you're like, wait a minute, I still remember stuff from last life. You know, I was a soldier, or I was cooking in a restaurant in Indiana, or I was a woman and that thought I should have been in a man's body, da, 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 da. You know, and you're going through all this stuff, and then after a couple of years, you forget it all. And here you are. And you've forgotten all that stuff that you've been in the in-between lives and all that other stuff. That's my understanding of it. Does that kind of match what yours is?
Well, yeah, to a degree. A lot of what you said, I agree with as well. I'd like to go back to the part where you're talking about after your life and the whole review process, and then you ponder it and philosophize and consider, you know, talk to your, you know, afterlife counselors or whatever.
Your advisors, yeah.
Yeah. I look at it as you have the opportunity to make any choice and every decision at any given time, all the time, and you experience all of those at every given moment. So I know this is getting into another topic of parallel lives and alternate realities, but at the same time, if you're able to experience every possible decision that you make, then in the review you've done everything, you've learned all you could from your experience. And going back to our episode one of our astrology podcast, the factory defaults, what you're born with, your default settings, your gifts and everything is all that you specifically need to learn the lessons that you have. And I think that's why people look at their charts for so long, is because it's my beliefs that that chart gives you a little clue as to the lessons that you can learn and that you have set up to learn in this lifetime. And so therefore it's kind of like a esoteric roadmap of, hey, guess what? You said before you incarnated in this lifetime that you wanted to focus on these areas of expertise, such as, you know, relationships or finances or work or whatever. Your chart will allude to that a little bit, so that when you actually do get into this review process, it's not a matter of how well did you accomplish everything. It's like, what did you learn?
Right. Okay.
And it's like, well, I learned this and this and this. I'm like, well, let's now bring in all your alternate parallel spirits and everything that made different decisions and took them on a different path, and let's combine y'all back together. And then we'll ask you again and say, well, what did you learn? I'm like, well, I think I should have not made a left turn when I was 24 going down that street, because it led to this little fender bender, which led to this whole situation, which led to the whole domino effect of experiences after that. And like, well, why do you feel like you shouldn't have done that? Because it wasn't fun. But you learn stuff. But it wasn't fun. You're not corporeal anymore. You're dead. It's fun is not a matter of... Well, that implies that being in the afterlife or in between life is not fun, and I don't want to actually say that.
Yeah, because it's a blast, I'm telling you.
Yeah.
Tunnel.
Yeah. I think you get what I'm saying, that with all the possible decisions, belief systems, ways that your life could have gone at any given moment, those all come together at the end, and so therefore, before you came in, every possible scenario of every decision that you would make would be unaccounted for. And so afterwards, they're all brought together, and you have this huge amount of knowledge from every decision that you made and how that created every little lifetime and every little choice that you made and every path that took you down. At the end, it's not a matter of, oh, you have a lot of bad karma. It's like, you learned a lot. What did you learn? How did you feel about it? Do you want to do it again? What parts did you like? What parts would you like to try again? Like, well, hey, I was a butcher for, you know, 60 years in that lifetime, and I would like to try something where, you know, I don't have to deal with dead flesh. I'm like, oh, okay, fine. We will make you a vegetarian, but you won't actually hit vegetarianism until you're, you know, 18 or 19 years old. well, can we scoot that back a little bit? Sure, we'll find parents that will start you off vegan, and that'll just be the way it is. Mm-hmm. And then every possible outcome that you could express in that will looked at. So I don't know if that's kind of what you're going at, or if it was more compacted in different areas for you or not.
As far as the life review?
Mm-hmm.
The life review, it's, you know, here's where it really gets kind of crazy for me. I mean, I like when you said it's not a matter of what, you know, did you accomplish this or not? It's more of a matter of what did you learn? Mm-hmm. I see the life review as completely without judgment. That's what I love about the belief system that does not involve punishment or reward, because I don't believe there's really a reward or a punishment as far as life experience goes. I think it is, it's one of those where we can use the term du jour, it is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's kind of life. Life, it is what it is. Our experiences, they are what they are. And it's to me, it's more going through it rather than anything and understanding what it means, what you did in the life and what you went through in the life. As far as their life review goes, here's what I find really, really interesting. And like it ties to what you were saying, the danger of getting into alternate realities and all that other stuff. I don't think you can get away from that in this conversation, because when you're alive, when we're the meat and water bag, as I like to call us, we're the meat, water and meat bag, we're more water, as we talked about last week. With the water and meat bags that we are, we're tied to time. Time is the ball and chain on our ankle. It's these little atoms that are kind of rolling around, their little energy sequences, and we're tied to time. We don't really have a choice in the matter. I mean, we do, we don't. You know, I can get really crazy with that stuff. But really, just as far as the meat and water part goes, it's time-based.
Mm-hmm.
Throw away the meat and water. You're in spiritual essence. You got no use for time anymore. It doesn't really apply. What we see as constant change, we interpret as time. Mm-hmm. But really, in the spiritual form, it's more just the changing of energy and the growing and the becoming and all that stuff. So time is not a factor anymore. If time is not a factor, how can we put multiple incarnations into any kind of sequence? How can we say this life occurred, then this life occurred, then this life occurred? And then how do you keep all those separate? If you don't perceive time because you're not chained to it anymore, because you're not physical, then are all these incarnations happening at once?
Ah, and that's something I am glad you brought up, because I had actually forgotten about that when we started. If every possible incarnation that you can have, every lifetime that you could have, is happening now, the great spiritual leaders always say there is no past, there is no future, there's only now.
Right.
Then what kind of implications does that have? For instance, what I said earlier about having every possible decision that you make split off into a different or alternate reality. What if you have another major person, another major entity that is almost exactly like you, but is experiencing things slightly different? A lot of people call these doppelgangers.
Mm-hmm.
If you have 2, 3, 5, 15 of your doppelgangers alive at the same time, roughly living in the same experience as you are, then every alternate reality that every single one of you and your doppelgangers could have would create a complete, almost a very complete essence of every lesson and experience that you could actually have. And we throw that in a little bit more when people actually go through a past life regression or a future life regression. If everything's happening now, what are they actually seeing when they have a past life regression?
Mm-hmm.
Well, for me personally, I believe that our DNA comes from our bloodline. And so that when we're actually having a past life regression, we are actually tapping into our genetic code of every person that is in our direct bloodline. That would be a genetic past life.
Mm-hmm.
Because without that person there, we would not be here. And we're reading their DNA information in a holographic sense of what their life had at that time that we are regressing to, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it does. So what I understand you saying is you're saying that the experience you're having right now, there are, I would go so far as to say, infinite versions of you as having a similar experience that has diverged based on having made a different choice.
Not exactly, because to me that sounds like you're saying clones of me making different choices, and I'm not talking about alternate lifetimes for the individual. I'm talking about different versions. Like, if we go with cars, we're talking about 98 Honda versus a 98 Mazda versus a 98 Toyota. You know, all cars, all the same year, all experiencing things a little different because they're tweaked in different ways.
Mm-hmm.
That would go back to the whole natal chart that we were talking about last week, where the natal charts of these different doppelgangers is not exactly cloned. There's little differences here and there because there's different life goals and life lessons that each one wants to learn, so that when they come together in the afterlife, it's almost like getting together with a whole bunch of brothers and sisters and cousins and having a whole big family reunion, swapping stories of like, dude, in this past life, when I was like 22, I had this experience. Like, no way. I had a similar experience when I was 24. And then someone else off to the side like, hey, you all are talking about that? Yeah, I didn't hit that until I was 48.
Okay. Now, but here's my question for you as far as the doppelgangers goes.
Mm-hmm.
What are the doppelgangers? Where do they reside? Or how do they reside, I guess?
For me, doppelgangers are part of your larger soul group that physically want to have a different shade of experience at the same time you are.
Okay.
If that makes sense. The difference between a spirit and a soul group is your spirit is you, your individual personality and everything that makes you you. And then your soul group is the larger tribe or family that you come from. And mm-hmm. so there's more of a familiar essence there. It's also could be considered your higher self.
Higher self, that's kind of mine. It's a conglomeration of different souls, I guess it were, for me.
Yeah. Oh, yeah,
I
totally.
Think we're using the same. It's the same idea, I think. We just use different terms.
Yeah, we're getting all caught up in the terminology because so many terms that we could use.
Yeah, exactly.
But, so the soul group, your higher self, I'm going to go with that terminology. The higher self is able to split itself into numerous incarnations. Now, it also wants to experience contrast, so it has incarnations where it's female and male and also this race or of that race.
Mm-hmm.
Doppelganger is almost the exact same split like you are, with just slight differences to experience things ever so slightly different. Like, basically, if you're shooting a laser through a lens, that would be you. You turn the lens ever so slightly to the left or right, that would be your doppelganger, and the laser is then affected ever so slightly. It has a whole new set of areas that it can go to and experience, so that your higher self is able to have more information from almost the exact same set of circumstances.
And you say that you have an opportunity to, your soul or your higher self has an opportunity to tap into those experiences of the doppelgangers during the life review?
Oh, it's not a matter of it has the opportunity to tap into it. It does tap into it.
It does.
Because
okay.
Your spirit, once you no longer have a body, your spirit rejoins your soul. You know, you're a drop in the ocean. You're a drop of seawater that goes back into the soul of who you are. The soul is then able to have that experience. And it's actually kind of interesting because I think I actually went to high school with one of my doppelgangers.
Oh, wow.
And he was only either one or two grades ahead of me. It was so weird because I actually saw him one time in the cafeteria in the lunch line. I wasn't next to him or anything, but I was actually saw him from across the cafeteria. Before then, I kept having people for probably about a year or two saying, hey, do you have a brother who, an older brother? I'm like, no,
right.
No. And then all of a sudden I saw this guy and I'm like, oh my goodness, it's literally looking into a mirror. He was about the same height. He had mm-hmm. almost exactly the same facial bone structure. He wore his hair the exact same way. He dressed almost exactly the same way. His nonverbal communication was slightly different, but he held himself a lot the same way that I did. I never actually got a chance to talk to him. Seeing him was very interesting. And so that's where the whole idea of doppelgangers really started to work in my brain, like, well, what is a doppelganger? How does it work? How does it relate to incarnations and past lives and future lives and this life? Right. This is where my whole philosophy started coming up from.
So there's incarnations, and there's also the idea of the doppelganger. So it's the fragments of ourselves that are kind of experiencing. I like to look at it as, to me, it's analogous to, I have several different moods. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a mood I have when I'm upset. There's a mood I have when I'm happy, and there's just all these different moods, but yet they're all part of me. But yet you can see how distinctly different they are from one another, mm-hmm. and yet also at the same time, you can see the similarity between me when I'm upset versus me when I'm happy, versus me when I'm contemplative. And I see those fragments, for lack of a better word, I don't want to say fragments, it cheapens it almost. It's almost like saying it's, because I do believe that it's kind of the sum of the whole kind of thing, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like we were talking about, you can't get your bachelor's degree in a semester.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have to go through each incarnation to really experience the breadth and the depth of the human experience. I do believe that all the incarnations do happen simultaneously.
Oh, yeah.
And I do believe that if we could, we could tap into each of these. And it's an interesting question. All of these are happening at the same time. How concrete is the past and how concrete is the future? The future, people say, oh, yeah, you know, the future is ever changing. It depends on the choices you make. But is the past also fluid? Is the past locked in? A lot of people will argue completely that the past is not changeable,
mm-hmm.
which would imply that the experiences you had in a past life are locked in.
Mm.
I personally think that the past can be changed. I think that as your present perception changes, the past changes. It's hard to explain, but I do believe that.
Well, that makes sense because you're talking about the difference between staying in linear time as opposed to being in nonlinear time. And in nonlinear time, everything is happening and everything is at this one moment right here, right now. Everything. And mm-hmm. what I was talking about earlier with your whole DNA and your bloodline as possibly being your connection to your past lives, if you have a change in you, that affects every cell in your body, including your DNA. Everything wants to order itself to the highest, most positive expression. Why wouldn't that ripple backwards through your bloodline, because if every possibility of every time and place is happening right now?
Exactly.
And that starts getting your head really starting to move around. People that haven't spent as much time looking at that start going, what were you smoking and why aren't you sharing?
Yeah, exactly. This is where you and I are in lockstep, and as far as what we believe is that the point of present is where everything is happening. There's no past, there's no future, there's only the now. And when you sit there and think about the past, you're thinking about it in the now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the only effect that the past really has on you is how you deal with it in this moment. The only effect that the future has on you is how you deal with it in this moment. So I agree completely with you in that. And I think what's going on is that the incarnation, let's take this incarnation because really it's the best one to talk about.
Yeah.
Because that's kind of the most one we're most aware of. this, it really, in our greater self, I think we can be aware of any of those incarnations that we choose. But right now, I think one of the things is this: the life lesson, the human experience, the design of the human experience and each incarnation we go through is our experience to be so highly focused that everything seems like it's in slow motion. Rocks are solid.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, everything is very concrete. Everything is very physical. And it seems like we can't bend this. We can't change it. All we've really done is we've all agreed this is the structure we're going to work with and this is the way it's going to appear. You know. But when you get out of the spiritual form, you're like, wait a minute. This is all just a construct of what we've created,
mm-hmm.
you know, or what source has created. Let me say that because that's kind of where my belief system goes. This incarnation is so highly focused, it's hard for us to see that there's much beyond the chain of time, the ball and chain of time. And I think that the idea is for us to focus so intently that we are so dependent on survival that the choices we make are based on survival.
Mm-hmm.
The lessons are contingent on having to be in the survival mode, to be in the physical mode, to be in the flesh mode, and sensation and all that that goes with it, and the chain of time, all of that is designed to help us learn the lessons. Without that, we can't. When you sit there and say, you know what, I can imagine what it's like, for example, you heard two people talk and somebody said, oh yeah, I went through this, and the other person says, I can only imagine, and the other person, and the one person says, no, you can't until you've gone through it. It's really the same idea. It's like, you got to go through it. You got to live it. You know, you can understand, you know, if I do this, it can have this impact on people and all that other stuff. Then you realize, you know what? I better go through the incarnation so I know what it's like. So I know, putting my hand on a hot stove, yeah, I can learn in the books that it's hot, but you got to put your hand on the hot stove to really know what it feels like to burn the skin. You know?
Yeah, sort of like if you're sitting in an interview with somebody and you're going for a job or whatever, they say, well, would you ever steal? There's so many things that go on in your brain right there, because stealing is considered bad, so you don't want to say, yes, I would steal. At the same time, I'm sure there is scenarios in everyone's life where they would definitely steal. For instance, you know, if you're a parent and you don't have a lot of money or anything and your children are starving, would you steal? Like, yeah, I'd go into a convenience store and, you know, grab a couple of things, put them under the coat or shirt or whatever, and run out of there as quickly as possible.
Right.
You know, because it may not be culturally accepted. I'm not even at that level of, hey, let's do what's right and what's morally and ethically sound to our ethics. It's going into the whole survival mode that you were talking about. If you're in this situation, would you do this? I'm like, I have no idea. As right. opposed to being in that situation, like, totally, I'd so be there.
Yeah, the old there but for the grace of God thing.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Now, you know, and this to me kind of takes us full circle to kind of where we started this topic, which was basically on the value system and the karma and the right and the wrong. For me, what we're all about is this amazing creative machine. Source is all about its creativity, its creation of itself, its recognition of itself, and its becoming, the constant becoming. It's like, you know, you see fountains and water's constantly coming out of it. To me, that's what creation is. Creation is this fountain of things always becoming. When you start to get that level of enlightenment that you talked about, when it's beyond words, you get to this point where you kind of feel that connection with everything.
Kind of like putting our feet in the fountain.
Like putting our feet in the fountain. Like feeling that the water cascading from the fountain. Often we sit there and feel that we're all the only drop. But when we realize that this wellspring of water that's coming out of the fountain, that we are that wellspring of water along with everything else, and you realize that you are so integrated with creation, with the source, with what's being created, with this sense of becoming and experiencing itself for the sake of experiencing itself, then you kind of get those aha and those epiphanies and those moments of enlightenment. And what I think happens with the right and the wrong, the further away that we take ourselves from understanding how connected we are to everything, that is where I think the right and the wrong starts to be created, and the idea of karma. When we create suffering in another person and do not realize the suffering that we really create in ourselves, and that how we're not really separate, how we remove ourselves from each other, how we don't recognize our own oneness, I think that's where the value judgments come into play. But really, I think creation just says, you know what, you're just denying yourself who you are. It's really illogical. It doesn't really make any sense, but we're not gonna tell you that that's not the way it goes, because they're with existence, there's non-existence, and creation kind of says, yeah, we accept that. We accept non-existence. We're not non-existence, but we accept that there is a non-existence. You know, it's kind of one of those that'll make you crazy if you just kind of chew on it for too long.
Oh, yeah.
It's not the gum that goes stale. It's the gum that gets you committed.
Yeah. Keep chewing and chewing and chewing.
Keep chewing, buddy. So that's kind of where I think that that whole idea of value judgment comes from.
Oh, cool.
That's mine.
Yeah, and I think that is actually a really good spot to end this conversation, because I'm sure we'll pick this up in the future. So for this episode 2 of Take the Red Pill, I am Donald.
And I am David.
And we thank you for listening, and we'll catch you next week.